Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Dion Gordon Podcast. I am your host, the connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, and the man who calls everything right down the middle, Dion Tyre Gordon. Enough of the bullshit. Let's get to work. Speaking of work, I'm at work today doing an install at a facility down here in Newport News, Virginia. And the particular facility I'm working in, the room I'm working in, has no cell phone service, no reception, no signal. I cannot receive any notifications, anything on my phone for about 8 fucking hours. So I go outside. The work day is finished. We are done. We have completed every day or today's task. Go outside. My phone starts buzzing, notifications, Facebook, Instagram, whatever the case may be, text messages, emails, whatever the fuck. The first thing I see on my phone after not having cell phone service for 8 hours, the first thing I see is that Brock Purdy, the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, is currently in concussion protocol, which means that this Sunday against the Cincinnati Bengals, the starting quarterback for my beloved San Francisco 49ers might be Sam Darnold. Sam fucking Darnold. Seeing ghost Sam Darnold. 8 hours of not having cell phone service. And the first thing I see when my phone comes back to life, when my phone emerges from its slumber, wakes up at the count of 8 like Tyson Fury when he fought Deontay Wilder, when that cocaine kicked in and Fury got back up. The cocaine kicked in on my phone and woke up after an 8-hour sabbatical, and the first thing I see is that Sam fucking Darnold might be starting this Sunday for the San Francisco 49ers. You got to be kidding me. You got to be yanking my chain. What in the teetotal shit is going on here? What did I do to deserve this? I'm a good person. I pay my taxes. I'm an upstanding citizen, a good Samaritan. I use my left and right turn indicators in traffic. I'm a good person. I help people out. I open doors. I say please and thank you. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. I'm a really good person. I'm not a religious person, but every now and then I have conversations with God, and I'll ask him. I say, God, same thing I just said, the same spiel. I'm a good person. I'm a good guy. Why do you keep fucking with me? What did I do to deserve this? Why do you keep fucking with me? I don't deserve this. What did I do? Was it something I said? Was it something in a previous life? You know how I am. You created me. Allegedly, I'm created in your image. You know I'm an asshole. You know I talk a lot of shit. You know I say things that can be taken as being derogatory, inflammatory, uncouth, belligerent, mean-spirited, antagonistic, whatever the case may be, but this is your fault. You made me. You did this. You got to take ownership of this. You created all things on planet Earth, including Dion Tyre Gordon. This is your fault. So why do you continue to punish me? I'm a good person. I don't do anything wrong to anybody. I usually stay to myself. I mind my own business. I stay out the way. I don't go around bothering other people. Other people bother me. It's not me. It's not my fault. It's not even that I'm trying to avoid accountability. I'm telling you the truth. I'm a good person. So God, why do you keep fucking with me? The only thing I ask for is peace and serenity and financial security. And also a 5 foot, let's say 6 or 7 Black woman, natural curly hair, big titties, big ass, Coke bottle figure, nice legs, pretty feet. That's all I ask for. That's all I want. But instead of getting all that, instead of getting the 5'7", 150, 160 pound, fully grown adult Black woman with natural curly hair, instead of getting that, what do I get? What does Dion Gordon receive? Sam Darnold being the starting quarterback for my favorite football team. What in the goddamn shit is that? Sam Darnold, are you serious? It's bad enough the 49ers are currently on a 2-game losing streak. Lost to the Cleveland Browns 19-17. Lost to the Minnesota Vikings on Monday Night Football a couple of days ago, 22-17. 2-game losing streak for a team that has legitimate Super Bowl aspirations. A team that many people, many prognosticators have predicted is going to play in this year's Super Bowl. A team that has one of the best or top five rosters currently in the NFL. All pros everywhere, both sides of the football. The NFL top 100 list of the top 100 players in the NFL. About 6, 7, 8 guys currently active on the 49er roster on that NFL top 100. Kyle Shanahan, top 5 coach in the NFL. Good football team, currently on a 2-game losing streak after getting off to a 5-0 start. Culminating, highlighted by that 42-10 absolute annihilation, destruction of the Dallas Cowboys, leaving them depressed, dilapidated, and downtrodden in Dallas. Completely destroyed the Cowboys on both sides of the football, 42-10. It wasn't even that close. The Niners could have put 50 up that game. On Sunday Night Football, 26 million people saw the Dallas Cowboys get earth, wind, fire, and ice beaten out of them by the San Francisco 49ers. And ever since that win, the Niners have been a flat, abysmal, lethargic, lackadaisical football team, have not looked good on the road at Cleveland. Now, if you want to, you can say, well, the weather was bad. It was cold. It was wet. Midwest game, you know, different time zone. Kind of had guys discombobulated. Brock Purdy had his first bad game. Cleveland's a pretty good football team. Number one defense in the NFL. Myles Garrett is a monster, as you saw last Sunday against Indianapolis, capable of winning a football game by himself. 2 sacks, strip sack, fumble in the end zone, blocked a field goal. This guy is a monster. This guy is a different breed. He takes over football games. He did that to San Francisco. He dominated. He fucked up Trent Williams. Myles Garrett in that game fucked up Trent Williams. And that doesn't happen usually. All-pro, 10-time Pro Bowl left tackle Trent Williams was dominated in that game by Myles Garrett. To me, there's no shame in losing to the Cleveland Browns for all those reasons. Great defense. The best defensive player in pro football. Yeah, I said it. We'll get to Nick Bosa in a little bit. The best defensive player in the league, good football team. If Deshaun Watson was still Deshaun Watson, if Deshaun Watson was 2018 or 2000, even 2021 Deshaun Watson, if he was still that guy, the Cleveland Browns could win the Super Bowl if Deshaun Watson was still that guy. They had P.J. Walker play against us. He's played the last 2 weeks. Watson came back, got hurt against Indianapolis. Former XFL quarterback, P.J. Walker's a nice backup quarterback, a pretty good football player. I would take P.J. Walker over Sam Darnold in a heartbeat all day, every day, twice on Sunday. If you told me that the Niners got to play a backup quarterback, which is not exactly unfamiliar territory, if that's the path that we got to travel, I would be a lot more comfortable with P.J. Walker at quarterback for the Niners as opposed to seeing ghost Sam Darnold. That's the case. That's what it is. You talk about, let's get to Monday night's game, the most recent 49er football game. On the road in Minneapolis, Minnesota, U.S. Bank Stadium, ESPN, Monday Night Football, Joe Buck, Troy Aikman on ESPN2, the Manning cast, Peyton and Eli. Big-time football game, a matchup of Kyle Shanahan's two favorite quarterbacks, the quarterback he currently has, Brock Purdy, and the quarterback he has coveted since about 2012, and the guy that he desperately wanted in 2017 when he took over in San Francisco as the head coach, Kirk Cousins, affectionately known as 1 o'clock Kirk Cousins. Well, this was primetime, and typically Kirk Cousins does not play well in primetime, but on Monday against the 49ers, he had a hell of a game. I like Kirk Cousins. I think he's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. He's much maligned, heavily criticized. A lot of people bring up that primetime win-loss record. They bring up his win-loss record in general. That's a team record. I don't know how many times I got to articulate this. I'm going to say it one more time. Wins and losses are reflective of the overall team, not the quarterback, not exclusively the quarterback. You don't always win games because of your quarterback. You don't always lose games because of your quarterback. It's a team sport. How many times have you heard people spout that cliche about football, that it's the ultimate team sport? But whenever somebody wants to slander and malign and criticize a quarterback, they bring up the win-loss record. Or if somebody wants to unjustly and undeservedly give credit to a quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo. When somebody wants to talk about how good a quarterback is, they bring up the team win-loss record. To me, that's complete bullshit. But getting back to Monday night's game, Kyle Shanahan's two favorite quarterbacks, Brock Purdy and Kirk Cousins, and Brock Purdy was outplayed by Kirk Cousins. Simple and plain, simple as that. The Niners lost 22-17. Why have the 49ers lost two consecutive football games? It's very simple. As I always say, football is, was, and always will be a game predicated on blocking and tackling. More specifically, football is always going to be won in the trenches, up front, offensive line, defensive line. The last 2 weeks, the 49ers got manhandled by the Cleveland Browns and the Minnesota Vikings, a team not known for their physicality. A team that even to this point, 7 games played, they're 3-4. They have not scored a rushing touchdown all season long. That's an unbelievable stat. The Minnesota Vikings have not scored a rushing touchdown. Kirk Cousins, you know what quarterback leads the NFL in passing touchdowns? My man, Kirk Cousins. 16 touchdown passes, 5 picks. I don't know about you, but I'll take that kind of production any day of the week. I've heard so many 49er fans, whenever that hypothetical was brought up, because Kirk Cousins, like I said, has been the apple of Kyle Shanahan's eye for a number of years now. And hypothetically, it's been brought up, trade scenarios where Kirk Cousins ends up being the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, and so many members of the 49er faithful are so put off and just irritated, resentful, just angry. They reject the idea, the concept, the notion that Kirk Cousins could be the 49ers quarterback one day. So many 49er fans hate that idea because they bring up my least favorite stat, the quarterback win-loss record. That is so asinine. It's so antithetical to an intelligent football conversation. It's just stupid. It's dumb. It's a dumb-ass stat. I hate it with a passion. But anyway, back to the game on Monday night. Kirk Cousins had a hell of a night. 35 of 45, 378 yards, 2 touchdown passes, 1 pick early in the first drive of the game, as a matter of fact. In the first quarter, threw a pass over the middle intended for Jordan Addison. The ball was strong-armed, taken away by Charvarius Mooney Ward. It looked like a robbery on the street. Jordan Addison got juxed on that play. Jordan Addison, by the way, born and raised in Frederick, Maryland, just like me. We got that in common. Jordan Addison joins another Frederick, Maryland legend in Chuck Foreman. Both men born and raised in Frederick, Maryland. Both men drafted into the NFL. And both men played professionally for the Minnesota Vikings. So with all that being said, Jordan Addison, local guy, same hometown, born and raised in Frederick. I root for him against other teams. I don't root for him against the 49ers. And he was outstanding on Monday night. 7 catches, 123, 2 touchdowns. Awesome performance by Jordan Addison. But first drive of the game has the ball taken away by Charvarius Mooney Ward. 49ers have the football, putting together a drive in the red zone. Christian McCaffrey, it was questionable as to whether or not CMC was going to play on Monday due to an oblique injury suffered against Cleveland the week prior. Also suffered an injury in that game was Deebo Samuel, injured his shoulder, and Trent Williams, our star left tackle, my favorite player on the team, 10-time Pro Bowler, grown-ass man, Trent Williams, big number 71, went down with a leg injury in that Cleveland game, continued the game, finished the game, but unavailable to play on Monday. So we're missing two of our best guys, Deebo and Trent Williams, and without Deebo Samuel, the offense doesn't work, and we saw this on Monday night. CMC fumbles the football in the red zone, and that, to me, is a problem because it's happened before. He did that. He had a fumble against Dallas in that 42-10 mollywhopping that took place on Sunday night 2 weeks ago. He fumbled the ball in the red zone against Dallas. CMC scores a touchdown every week. He had 2 in this game, but we got to clean up the fumbling. We got to clean up the turnovers. That can't happen, especially in the red zone. That's a scoring opportunity, obviously, given away. Minnesota takes the football, takes it down the field, and then Jordan Addison, the aforementioned Jordan Addison, catches his first touchdown pass of the evening. Throughout the entire game, San Francisco offensively just didn't look right. As I said, without Deebo Samuel, the offense doesn't work. It just doesn't. He makes everything go. He has no real defined position. Is he a wide receiver? Not really. Is he a running back? Sometimes. He's a hybrid. He's both. But his versatility and his awesomeness as a football player, everything he brings to the field, he's a weapon. He's a playmaker. He's a touchdown or a first down or a big play waiting to happen. He makes shit happen. 19 is awesome. I've spoken in a very high regard about Deebo Samuel for a number of years on this podcast. I've been doing this for about 3 years now. I've had nothing but complimentary things to say about Deebo Samuel, and without him, the 49ers are a different football team. We lose our identity. We're not as physical without him. They try to put Elijah Mitchell in the backfield to copy and paste what Deebo does. He can't replicate that. Elijah Mitchell's washed. I hate to say it for a guy in year three, for a guy who looks so good his rookie season, he's washed. Either he's hurt or he's about to get hurt. And those injuries have taken a toll on him. He's not the same running back he was in his rookie season. And they put him out there to try to take the place of Deebo, to try to inject some life and energy into the offense. It's not happening with him. He's not that guy. You know who is that guy? Jordan Mason. Where's he at? Jordan Mason runs hard. Jordan Mason runs like a slave trying to escape to the north. He runs the football like you're supposed to, with aggression, with hostility, physicality. There's a nastiness about Jordan Mason. I don't know why Kyle Shanahan doesn't use him more often. He's already in the process of running McCaffrey into the ground. McCaffrey's hurt right now already. And God bless him, he tried to play through that injury. You hold your breath every time he's on the field because he does have a history of getting hurt. I mean, that's just what it is with him. I'm a CMC fan, but you do always in the back of your mind worry about his health and durability. However, he does score a touchdown. He atones for his previous mistake by scoring a touchdown at the end of the first half to cut the lead to 10-7. Pivotal moment in the game. You can make an argument this decided the football game at the end of the first half. 49ers just scored. 10-7, Minnesota has the lead. Less than 1 minute to go, Vikings have the football. As a matter of fact, 33 seconds on the clock. Kirk Cousins drops back the pass. 49ers inexplicably send everybody all out cover zero blitz. Go get them. Couldn't sack them all night. Couldn't get home. Couldn't get pressure with four guys. So let's blitz. Let's send everybody with 33 seconds left on the clock. Nobody back there except for DBs. One-on-one man coverage. No help. Kirk Cousins throws it up. Jordan Addison this time seeks retribution and revenge against Charvarius Mooney Ward. This time he jukes him. Addison takes the ball away from Mooney Ward. It looked like that episode of Seinfeld where Jerry robbed the old lady for that marble rye. It reminded me of that. And then Addison runs untouched about 30 or 40 yards into the end zone. Touchdown, Minnesota Vikings. Going into the locker room, going into halftime. And now instead of a 10-7 game, San Francisco gets the football first to begin the second half. You got momentum. You got confidence. You just scored. You cut the lead to 3 points. You're feeling good about yourself. Now you give up this long touchdown pass because your defensive coordinator, Steve Wilks, thought it'd be a great idea to send everybody in a 49er uniform, past and present. I saw Ronnie Lott on that blitz, as a matter of fact. Keena Turner was trying to get to Kirk Cousins on Monday night. Bill Romanowski, Lee Woodall, Dana Stubblefield, Brian Young, Gary Plummer, all these guys. Patrick Willis came out of retirement for that one play to blitz Kirk Cousins on Monday Night Football, and it didn't work. Jordan Addison makes a great play and scores a back-breaking touchdown that demoralized the 49ers going into the locker room. Steve Wilks got an answer for that. A lot of people, a lot of 49er fans, 49er media, just killing Steve Wilks all week long in the aftermath of that 49er loss on Monday. And it's not just 49er fans and analysts and media and pundits that have criticized Wilks and his decision to send that all-out blitz at the end of the first half against Minnesota, the 49ers head coach, Kyle Shanahan, publicly threw him under the bus today at his weekly press conference. He says, yeah, he knows he messed up. That, to me, that's embarrassing. That's garbage. An absolute disgrace for Kyle to even say that. As if he's never made mistakes in coaching. As if he's never called the wrong play. As if he's never been too conservative or too aggressive or just made the wrong decision as the head coach of the 49ers. As if he's never done anything to welcome and invite criticism. Get the fuck out of here, Kyle. You're just going to throw your own defensive coordinator under the bus like that publicly? That's garbage. Everybody this week talking about Steve Wilks sucks. The defense is trash. People saying he should be fired. It's only 7 games into the season. And the last two games that we lost, the Cleveland and Minnesota, they've given up 41 points in 2 games. 19 against Cleveland, 22 against Minnesota. Your defense gives up 41 points in 2 weeks. You should win those games. Let's have a conversation about that, Kyle. The defense, ever since Kyle took over, the defense usually, consistently, with the exception of a couple of games here and there, the 49er defense has outperformed the 49er offense. Who's in charge of the 49er offense? Who calls those plays? Kyle Shanahan. How come your offense can't put up more than 19 points to beat the Cleveland Browns? How come your offense can't score more than 22 against a Minnesota Viking defense that's just okay? They're just all right. We're not talking about the Purple People Eaters. I did not see John Randall coming off the edge trying to apply pressure on Brock Purdy on Monday night. They're just okay. Danielle Hunter is a great player, a very good player. My man Harrison Smith, Notre Dame alumni, I like him. I root for him. I'm a Notre Dame fan for college football. They're all right. They're pretty good. They got a decent defense, but still, you should score more than 22 points against the Minnesota Vikings. I understand that Debo's not out there and Trent Williams are not out there. But you're supposed to be this evil genius, the boy wonder, the smartest guy in the room. Just ask him. The offense, this football savant is what you're supposed to be, and your offense can't outscore 22 points or 19 the previous week. And then you got the audacity to go to your weekly press conference and throw your defensive coordinator under the bus. That's fucking garbage. If we are going to have a conversation about the 49er defense and their ineffectiveness throughout much of this season. A lot of people have talked about how the 49er run defense is not that great. We can't create pressure. Let's get to the meat and potatoes of this. This is a very expensive defensive line. There's a lot of guys getting paid a lot of money by the 49ers to go get the opposing quarterback. And on Monday night, Kirk Cousins dropped back the pass 45 times and was not sacked once. Nick Bosa plays for the 49ers, allegedly. 18 and a half sacks last season. Defensive player of the year. Got paid. And he deserves that money. He earned that money. Nick Bosa has been the most important player on the 49er roster since he was drafted in 2019. The fortunes of the franchise turned around in the 2019 NFL draft when Roger Goodell said with the second pick in the 2019 NFL draft, the San Francisco 49ers select Nick Bosa, defensive end, the Ohio State University. Great football player. Amazing football player. This season, ever since he got paid, though, let's call it what it is, underwhelming, disappointing, not playing up to his own standard. The production isn't there. A lot of pressures. He's getting close. You know, he's in the vicinity of the quarterback. He's breathing on him. He knows what cologne Kirk Cousins wears. He just couldn't sack him on Monday night. No sack-a-roonies for Nick Bosa on Monday night against Minnesota. Javon Hargrave, free agent acquisition, brought him in from the Philadelphia Eagles. Very good football player. I'm a big fan of Javon Hargrave. But same thing, production, numbers, stats, bringing down the other team's quarterback. And hasn't done that a whole lot in this season. Eric Armstead, and another guy that got paid a lot of money, he was rewarded for his production in 2019. He led that team in sacks. And that 2019 49er defense is the best 49er defense I've seen in a long time. Last season was great. And there were a couple of years under Jim Harbaugh where that defense was rolling. But in 2019, pass rush unbelievable that season. Just four down linemen wreaking havoc on a weekly basis. D Ford, rookie Nick Bosa, DeForest Buckner, and Eric Armstead. Out that whole quartet of guys I just mentioned, he led that team in sacks. And he got paid. And the organization chose him over DeForest Buckner. And what have we really gotten in return for that? Armstead's best attribute is playing the run and taking away pressure, creating lanes for Nick Bosa to come in and get sacks, making it easier for other guys to come in and get production. Armstead's a good football player, but for the amount of money you're being paid and the fact that we chose you, the organization chose you over DeForest Buckner, you got to give more than what you're given. And right now, this 49er front four can't create pressure. But to me, the biggest guy that you got to look at is 97 is Nick Bosa. Plain and simple, the highest paid defensive player in pro football. And he's not living up to his own standards and own expectations so far this season. Myles Garrett should be the highest paid defensive player in pro football. He's better than Nick Bosa. As I said earlier, he single-handedly won a football game, pretty much, against Indianapolis. I mean, the referees also helped out with that, too, but that's a different story. But Myles Garrett really fucked up the Indianapolis Colts last Sunday, and he does this on a weekly basis. He's amazing. He's everything that I want Nick Bosa to be this season, and it's not happening. T.J. Watt, same thing. He impacts the football game. Nick Bosa so far this season really has not impacted any football game. He's been either okay or he's been a ghost. Let's call it what it is. For the amount of money you're getting paid, you need to produce more than what you are. That's just what it is. It's a transactional business. It's a transactional relationship between fans and players. If you're producing, fans love you. If you're not producing, fans don't fuck with you. And right now, a lot of fans don't fuck with Nick Bosa. The criticism for Steve Wilks, I hear it. I understand some of it. But at the end of the day, when all is said and done, the players got to go out there and produce. And when you got a player on your defensive line that is the reigning NFL Defensive Player of the Year and the highest paid defensive player in pro football, he's got to be better than that. To me, the conversation starts with Nick Bosa and not Steve Wilks. And all of this correlates with what I was talking about earlier, why the 49ers have lost two consecutive football games, because in two consecutive games, they've lost the line of scrimmage against Cleveland and Minnesota. Against the Browns, our offensive line got moved back about 3 yards every play. The Browns reestablished a new line of scrimmage consistently against us. And Minnesota kind of did the same thing. We can't get our running game going. We only had 65 yards rushing on Monday night against Minnesota. That's unconscionable. That can't happen. The 49ers can't win a football game only as a team collectively, like more than one person rushing for 65 yards. That's a combined total from Christian McCaffrey. Elijah Mitchell had one carry for negative 1 yard. George Kittle had a carry in that game. And it's not enough. It all adds up to 65 yards. You're not going to win. The line of scrimmage has been lost the last 2 weeks. San Francisco prides itself on being a physical football team, being nastier than everybody we play against. And that's why we win. That's been the formula and the key to success during the entire Shanahan Lynch era. Win the line of scrimmage. The last 2 weeks has not happened. Rush 4, drop 7, create pressure with 4 guys. We don't need to blitz that much. Well, when those 4 guys can't create pressure, now you got to call some more blitzes. And I hear everybody killing Wilks for calling so many blitzes. Yeah, the one in Minnesota at the end of the first half, that was fucking stupid. That was a dumb play call, a dumb decision. I'll acknowledge that. But throughout the entire game, people always wonder, why is he calling so many blitzes? Because our 4 down linemen can't create pressure on their own like they're supposed to. That's what they're getting paid for, and they're not doing it. Now, with all that being said, let's talk about the most important position in sports and the guy that plays that position for the San Francisco 49ers. Of course, we're talking about Brock Purdy, the next big thing, the suplexorcist, the attitude era, the beast incarnate, Brock Purdy, old Purdy bastard, Glock Purdy, the man of 1,000 nicknames. Got off to a hellacious start for his NFL career, a Cinderella story if there ever was one. 10-0. His first 10 career starts in the NFL in games that he started and finished, but now he's lost two games in a row. And Brock Purdy has been underwhelming in both of those games. He's given credence and validity to all the naysayers, all the people, all of the Brock Purdy detractors that said that Brock Purdy is a system quarterback. He's only good because of the people around him. He's a product of Kyle Shanahan, play calling, and everything else. Well, if that's the case, how come Brian Hoyer and Nick Mullins and CJ Beathard and Jimmy Garoppolo and, goddammit, I hate to say it, Trey Lance, how come all those guys sucked playing quarterback for the 49ers? How come all those guys never made the plays that Brock Purdy has made in his time of being a quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers? Do I think that Brock Purdy is an elite NFL quarterback? No. There are questions and concerns about him, accuracy being number one, and that was the biggest knock on him coming out of Iowa State, an inaccurate quarterback, in addition to being a smaller, undersized quarterback, but mainly his accuracy issues. And we've seen that in different games this season where he's missed wide open guys or thrown a ball too high. Saw that in the first half of this game. He almost got George Kittle killed in the first half. He threw him a hospital ball. I had flashbacks. I still have PTSD from Jimmy Garoppolo playing quarterback for the 49ers. And there were times in this game where Brock Purdy, dare I say, reminded me of Jimmy Garoppolo. That's scary. I got to talk to my therapist. I got to consult BetterHelp or whoever, an online therapist. I got to go to church. I got to sit in a confessional. I got to talk. I'm not even Catholic. I got to talk to somebody about Jimmy Garoppolo's experience and time of being a quarterback of the 49ers and the mental and psychological toll it took on me as a fan. But Brock Purdy, there were times where he reminded me of that depressingly mediocre quarterback that stunk up the joint and cost the 49ers three Super Bowls in a five-year span. Of course, I'm talking about Jimmy Garoppolo. There were times where Brock Purdy reminded me of that hospital ball to Kittle in particular. And in case you don't know, in case you're not up to date on the podcast, in case you have not heard me articulate what a hospital ball is, here is your definition. A hospital ball is a pass that was intended for your receiver, but unfortunately the ball was thrown so high, so inaccurate, that it forced your intended receiver to make a heroic and courageous attempt to catch this pass that apparently was intended for Victor Wembanyama, the 7'4" French basketball player, the number one pick in the NBA draft. That's the only way anybody could have caught that pass from Purdy to Kittle in the first half. You had to be 7'4". Joel Embiid probably maybe could have caught that pass. Kevin Durant could have caught it, but not George Kittle. And there were times throughout the game and last week's game against Cleveland and a couple of other games, even the games the 49ers won, where Brock Purdy was a little off, a little inaccurate, a little helter-skelter. And you kind of see why he was that literal last pick in the NFL draft, Mr. Irrelevant. I still like him. I still like Brock Purdy. But I think he's somewhere in between in regards to the way that people talk about him. I don't think he's an elite, upper echelon, top five quarterback. No, that was never the case. But I also don't think he's the drizzling shits. And I don't subscribe to the whole system quarterback conversation. Every quarterback is a system quarterback. Patrick Mahomes runs Andy Reid's system. Josh Allen runs a system. Joe Burrow plays in a system. Joe Montana played in Bill Walsh's system. Every quarterback, for the most part, is a system quarterback. The only two quarterbacks that I can look at and say these guys were not system quarterbacks are Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. Peyton Manning was the system. He ran his own offense. He called his own plays. Tom Brady played in multiple systems. His entire career, it changed on a regular basis. You go from Charlie Weiss, Bill O'Brien, Josh McDaniels twice. Then you go to a different team. You go to Tampa, and you play in the Bruce Arians system, the Byron Leftwich system, and you dominate in that. You throw 40 touchdown passes in back-to-back seasons, win a Super Bowl, playing an entirely different system. Those are the only two quarterbacks I can look at and say they're not system quarterbacks. Everybody else plays or played in a system. So when people try to downplay Brock Purdy's success and say, well, he's only a beneficiary and byproduct of the system, to me, that's ridiculous because, as I said earlier, There were other quarterbacks that played the exact same system and didn't have nearly the amount of success or results that Brock Purdy had. Did not put up the same numbers. The offense was not averaging 30 points a game for a 10-game stretch under Jimmy Garoppolo or Trey Lance or C.J. Beathard or Nick Mullins or Brian Hoyer. That did not happen. It happened under Brock Purdy. He's somewhere in between, which is a monumental achievement for the guy that was the literal last pick in the NFL draft. This guy's making $900,000 a year living in the California Bay Area. He needs a second job. When Brock Purdy is not playing quarterback for the 49ers, he's a busboy at Outback Steakhouse. Did Brock Purdy play well against Minnesota on Monday night? I give him about a B-. I thought, other than the hospital ball to Kittle, I thought he played well in the first half. And then the fourth quarter happened, and he self-destructed. Did not play well the entire fourth quarter. Had two interceptions in the fourth quarter. Part of that could have been, or might have been, because apparently he was concussed. And that's why, as I said earlier, there's a legitimate chance that Sam Darnold could play quarterback, be the starting quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers this Sunday, because apparently Brock Purdy got hurt in the fourth quarter of that Minnesota game, and it may or may not be a concussion. The play happened on a quarterback sneak, which was successful. He converted it, but he got hit in the head by a Minnesota linebacker. I couldn't make out the name of the guy that did it, but it was contact to the head. Should have been a penalty when you think about it, when you go back and look at it, but it wasn't called. And then the very next play, Brock Purdy threw a pick, the first pick of the game that he threw, and then trying to put together a late-game drive to win the game, potentially, gets picked off again. So two picks after you get concussed, I really can't be all that upset about it. But at the end of the day, it's back-to-back underwhelming performances for the guy that's been deemed the savior of the franchise, Brock Purdy. His last two games, when trailing in the fourth quarter, uncharted territory for Brock Purdy. All the other games he played for the 49ers, San Francisco had a considerable lead in the fourth quarter in most of those games. They were blowing teams out. The 42-10 demolition of Dallas 2 weeks ago highlights that. But a lot of the Purdy naysayers and detractors and the Purdy critics out there have consistently asked the question, what is Brock Purdy going to look like in the fourth quarter of a game when San Francisco is down and he has to bring them back? Well, the last 2 weeks, we got a chance to see that, and the results have been not good. 12 of 31, 166 yards, zero touchdowns, three picks, a passer rating of 17.1. On Monday night against Minnesota, 5 of 11, 58 yards, zero touchdowns, two picks in the fourth quarter, albeit under a concussion. The guy was concussed throughout much of that putrid performance in the fourth quarter against Minnesota. However, the numbers are what they are. And Brock Purdy himself would be the first person to tell you he's not going to make excuses. He's not going to point to the concussion and say, well, that's why I threw two interceptions. That's why I did not play well in the fourth quarter, completely abysmal during the fourth quarter of that football game. You know who else was completely abysmal in this game? Don't think I forgot about this. The kicker, the third-round draft pick, missed two kicks last week versus Cleveland, one of which the potential game winner, 41 or 42 yards, missed two kicks in that game, a game San Francisco lost by 2 points, okay? That's one bad game, you know what? Go ahead and shrug that off, put that in the rearview mirror. Don't even dwell on that. Don't think about that. Move forward. This week's going to be different. You're going to bounce back. You're going to have a great game. Well, come out in the first half and miss a 40-yard kick wide right indoors. A lot of people last week said, well, you know, he missed those two kicks. It was outside. It was in Cleveland. Inclement weather, cold, wet, rainy, windy, etc. This was inside of a fucking dome. Climate controlled. No weather conditions to worry about. You miss wide right as a third-round draft pick kicker. Inexcusable. You know what the 49ers could have done with that third-round pick? Get some help on the offensive line, some help in the secondary, another playmaker, another wide receiver, another quarterback. Fuck it. My personal theory is, one of my many theories about football is, keep drafting a quarterback every year until you find one. I don't care. You got Brock Purdy. That's cool. That's great. Draft another quarterback. Go get another one. Third round, fourth round, fifth round, sixth, seventh, whatever. We already showed, we've already established that we can find a pretty good quarterback with the last pick in the draft. So keep drafting them. Just take a quarterback every year until you find the right one. But instead of doing any of that, the San Francisco 49ers took a kicker in the third round, Jake Moody. And when you go in the third round as a kicker, there's a lot of pressure on you. You got to deliver. You got to be great. Kickers don't usually go in the third round. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago when Tampa Bay took Roberto Aguayo, a kicker out of Florida State, in the second round. He was awful. But when Tampa made that pick, I mean, that was a head-scratcher. There were a lot of raised eyebrows about taking a kicker in the second round, especially for Tampa, who wasn't very good. They had a lot of holes to fill on that roster. And you're going to take a kicker in the second round? The 49ers admittedly don't have that many holes to fill, but they do on the offensive line. They do in the secondary. You could use another young quarterback, another playmaking receiver. You got one in Ronnie Bell, who's made some plays whenever he's on the field. He's in the same boat as Jordan Mason. How come he's not out there? Ronnie Bell also went to Michigan, except Ronnie Bell is productive whenever he's on the field for the 49ers. Jake Moody also played in Michigan. He's not productive. He's a kicker. You got one job, and you're not doing that job. And as a third-round kicker, you're under the microscope. That pressure, that spotlight is on you. Everybody's eyes are focused on you. We took a kicker in the third round. We took Fred Warner in the third round in 2018. This guy's an all-pro middle linebacker. The best middle linebacker in pro football is Fred Warner, third-round draft pick. You can find a lot of value, good quality football players in the third round. But the 49ers took a fucking kicker. Jiminy Christmas, I mean, you know, we're 5-2. We're still in good shape. First place in our division. But for me personally, I look at the bigger picture. My eyes are always going forward. I'm always thinking about what's next and what's on the horizon. And for the 49ers, the bigger picture is getting to the Super Bowl and this time winning it. And the biggest obstacle, the biggest impediment for San Francisco in regards to getting to the Super Bowl again is the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles right now are a better football team than the 49ers. I got no issue in saying that. Specifically up front, in the trenches, the most important part of football, where games are won and lost, Philadelphia murders people in the trenches, at the line of scrimmage, at the point of attack. They fuck people up on a weekly basis. Look at that Sunday night game versus Miami. That was an execution. That was a game where it was close, but it really wasn't close. Philadelphia is superior in the trenches, up front, offensive, defensive line, to almost every team in the NFL right now. They just get shit done. Their offensive line moves people out the way. And so many people cry and complain about that brotherly shove, that tush push. Philadelphia always goes for it on 4th-and-1. It's a given. The Sunday night game, they had 4th-and-1 at their own 26-yard line and went for it, and it was successful. They know it's going to be successful. They practice this. They're better at that than everybody in the league. They got a quarterback that can squat 600 pounds in Jalen Hurts, and they got a future Hall of Famer playing center in Jason Kelce. The quarterback and the center, and then the rest of the offensive line, that play is undefeated. You cannot stop it. I've heard people say, well, we should outlaw that play. For what? You're going to outlaw a play because one team is too good at it? I've seen other teams try to run that same play. They're not that good at it. They don't have a quarterback that can squat 600 pounds, and they don't have a future first ballot Hall of Fame player playing center on their offensive line currently. You don't have Jalen Hurts and Jason Kelce, so you can't run that play. Get over it. Either figure out a way to stop it or shut the fuck up. It's just that simple. Philadelphia, to me, is superior to I'm a 49er fan. That's obvious. But I'm also a person, as I say at the intro of every single podcast, I call things right down the middle. The Eagles are a superior football team to the 49ers. And we're going to play them week 13 in December. And more than likely, in my opinion, I think it's inevitable. There's going to be a rematch in the NFC playoffs between San Francisco and Philadelphia. The Eagles are probably going to win that game again. because they're just better up front, and that's just what it is. The trade deadline is next week. John Lynch, Adam Peters, Shanahan, whoever, got to make some moves. The Niners got to get better. We need more playmakers. Hunter Renfrow, what's up, man? I know you're frustrated playing in Vegas. Jimmy never even looks your way. He's looking for Jacoby Myers and maybe kind of sort of Devontae Adams, depending on how far down the field he is. But Hunter Renfrow, ain't nothing coming his way. Come on over to San Francisco, a route-running monster like that in the Shanahan offense. Hunter Renfrow could do damage playing for the 49ers, but we need more help also up front to combat that absolute juggernaut in Philadelphia, because right now we just don't match up. I'm just calling it the way I see it. We do not match up in the trenches against the Philadelphia Eagles. Their defensive line gets pressure and sacks. They finish the play. They get to the quarterback and bring him down. Jordan Davis, the young man out of the University of Georgia, drafted last season, a little bit overweight, out of shape last season, definitely in shape this season, a one-man wrecking crew. Fletcher Cox, they got ballers. They got dudes over there in Philadelphia. And as a 49er fan that wants my team to win, but also as a realistic person, as someone who, I'm not going to be arrogant and say I know a lot about football, but I know a lot about football, and in the trenches, I just don't see it, man. We got to keep pace with them at least. And that's why every game the 49ers play is so important, because we're 5-2 right now. Philadelphia is 6-1. That chase for home field advantage in the playoffs, to me, matters a lot. Other 49er fans and people I talk to downplay it. I don't understand why. The last two times the 49ers played in the NFC Championship game, they lost. Both times, it was on the road, at Philadelphia and at Los Angeles. When they played the NFC Championship game in 2019, it was at home at Levi's. And guess what? The 49ers won that game. It would behoove them to try to win as many regular season games as possible to make sure that NFC Championship and that 12-round or old-school 15-round heavyweight championship fight against Philadelphia takes place in our stadium this season and not theirs. Because if we got to go on the road again and play them in Philadelphia, I don't like our chances. I like our chances a little bit more, a lot more, playing them in Santa Clara. But that's a good football team. I take nothing away from the Philadelphia Eagles. And we got to get our pass rush solidified again. They got to get going. They got to crank it up. Bosa, Cleveland Farrell, another guy. That's a former first-round draft pick. Got picked by the Raiders, but still, that's a former first-round draft pick. Drake Jackson, second-round draft pick. Javon Kinlaw, on his last chance, where is he? Javon Hargrave, Eric Armstead, all these guys, man, either former first-round draft picks or guys that are currently getting paid a lot of money or both at the same time, and they're not producing. And we're 5-2. We're one game behind Philadelphia right now. To me, they're the target. They're the team we got to measure up against. It's everything is about Philadelphia for me this season. And that's just what it is. And Cincinnati this Sunday, good football team, good opponent. I know the win-loss record is not ideal or not what they expected or a lot of other people expected, but still, they're a quality football team. I know Joe Burrow is banged up with a bad calf. He has not looked himself for most of the season so far, but still, he's Joe Burrow. He's the second best quarterback in the NFL. Let's call it what it is. You got Patrick Mahomes, number one. In my opinion, Joe Burrow is number two. And it looks like he's starting to get a little healthier. And it's still got Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. And they got a pretty good defense over there, too. So this is going to be a tough football game this Sunday for the 49ers. And to me, you know, it sounds ridiculous and outlandish to even say this, but to me, it's a must-win situation because of what I just said. You got to keep pace with Philadelphia. That's a definite must. That's very important. It's critical, essential, pivotal. Keep pace with Philadelphia and try to get home field in the playoffs. That's what the 49ers need to be focused on. Get the pass rush back up to speed again. Hopefully get some guys back off injury. Debo and Trent hopefully come back soon. CMC, take care of himself. You know, 5-2, it's okay. Like, it's not panic time yet, but when you look at the bigger picture, when you kind of project forward, in my mind, I'm thinking, can we get to the Super Bowl again? Can we get past Philadelphia right now? Honestly, I would say no. But hopefully I'm wrong. So with all that being said, this concludes this edition of the Dion Gordon Podcast. Eternally grateful, always humble, and very much appreciative. And remember, at all times, tread lightly like a woodpecker with a headache. Until next time, picture me rolling. I'm out.